Hi, everybody. Welcome to a Wednesday Sports Line, the Bulldog Hour. Cap Maury alongside, as always, we'll take you to three. Hand it off to our good buddy, Phil Bonatti, who is on Radio Row in San Francisco for the Super Bowl. Again, we have coverage beginning at 11 o'clock in the morning of that 3:30 kickoff from Westwood One. And Phil, there all week, bringing you all the goings-on that relate to not only the game, but everything in regard to Central California and the game itself. So we'll get to Phil for the full three as soon as we wrap up. I'll tell you all about the schedule for both 1430 and 790 a little bit later on, courtesy of Ed Dunkel and his outstanding business. Precision Civil Engineering, Planning, Land Surveying, Civil Engineering, Landscape Architecture, Construction Management, all there under one roof, 449-4500 or precisieneng.net for more information. When we go over the schedule, I'll tell you about the great fundraising Ed does for his alma mater, Fresno State, through the Lyles College of Engineering. We'll get to that a little bit later on. Jack Furtig with me on a Wednesday. Fortuitous timing. A lot of Tuesday night games for Fresno State this year, basketball-wise, in conference. So it works out perfectly that Jack is on Wednesdays, though Jack has been on Wednesdays with me for a number of years. And, of course, the game last night almost ended up on Wednesday, the way it was going. And we'll talk about that truly extraordinarily unpredictable and almost impossible to explain game last night. If you didn't see it, the good news is, because it happened to be one of the few on national TV, you can go to the app for Fox and watch it again if you'd like. I don't think UNLV wants to watch it again, and I think for a lot of us that watched it, we felt like we played it. It was so difficult to go through the gut-wrenching 40-plus minutes in what may have been the longest game in running time, the real action time, meaning when it started clockwise till it ended, without some sort of logistic delay like a backboard being off or whatever. All of the delays were related to the game itself last night, and that thing lasted forever. Was well worth it. We're going to talk about it momentarily with Jack and go over all the nuances of a truly crazy and rewarding night for Fresno State, that's for sure. But before we get there, our other great lead dogs at Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing, who have been with us for a long, long time, want to once again allow me the time to tell you about the weather. Again, they've been in the Central Valley, Lee's has, since 1981. You see the avocado green and blue trucks all over the place. I've had them in to do work even during COVID. Terrific people. If you need anything, give them a call, 825-5337, which is 825-Lee's, or hop on the web at leesair.com. They also sponsor the Lee's Air hotline. Jack is waiting on that hotline right now, 559-320-1430. Phil is able to bring up callers from the general public during his show at that number as well, so mark that down. As far as the forecast goes, it's another 10-day really pleasant outlook in the afternoons. Foggy in the morning. It was incredibly foggy last night. I'm up all night most of the time working because of the time zones that I have to deal with. And it was the fog that almost looks like rain, and it even got worse as we got to daybreak, and then it finally started to dissipate. We're going to deal with another dense fog advisory until noon tomorrow, so be careful. We know about it this time of year, that's for sure, particularly in the outlying areas. But what's happening right now is the fog is burning off to temperatures in the mid to high 60s. We're going 64 today, 66 tomorrow, and then 67, a couple of 68s over the weekend. Dip down a little bit starting next week, and then back up to the mid 60s and maybe toward the 70s toward the end of next week. The next chance of rain would appear to be Monday or Tuesday. I mentioned yesterday we had a dry January, both from a figurative standpoint about alcohol and a literal standpoint about we did not get any rain after a very strong start to the rainy season. It would be a real good idea to have a rainy February. We'll see how it plays out. But right now, it's just the same pattern because of the high pressure, and unless that high pressure breaks, we are going to continue to see fog in the morning, temperatures in the mid-40s overnight, and then mid-60s in the afternoon. So it's really nice for creature comfort, but not great for what we could face in the spring and summer in regard to watering restrictions, and obviously for the ag people, that is critically important. Anyway, we thank everybody at Lee's for allowing us the time to tell you about the weather. Again, leesair.com, 825-5337, 825-LEES. Anything you need, central air, plumbing, heating, or roofing. Now, on the aforementioned Lee's Air hotline, 559-320-1430, it is our great friend, longtime basketball analyst, and a guy who was trying to get some walking in around the concourse last night, and I think he probably got a marathon in. It is Jack Furtick. Jack, how you doing?
Well, still struggling from this from the surgery, but struggling more from the game last night.
Well, all I can tell you, Jack, about another Jack, Jack Buck. Jack Buck, after the home run by Kirk Gibson in Game 1 of the World Series in 1988, not a fond memory for me as an Oakland A's fan, because Dennis Eckersley threw him one too many backup sliders. Let's put it this way. If he didn't walk the hitter in front, if he didn't walk Davis, then it wouldn't have been a problem with Gibson. But Jack Buck said, "I don't believe what I just saw when a very crippled Kirk Gibson hit the home run that really gave the Dodgers a chance to win that series." I would say this about last night. I don't believe what I just saw, because that's how I felt last night. You know, I had the Warrior game. And so when things were starting last night, Jack, I had the Warriors at 7, Fresno State on another set at 8. I had the satellite feed up. Fox had their announcers in person last night, which is always nice. They had the backhaul feed, which means the feed that goes back to the studio in case the fiber optic feed, which is the primary feed, goes down. So it was nice to have that on. I had that on one TV, and I'm thinking, okay, this is a timeout. The Warrior game should end about 9:30. I knew they were going to get killed because Steph was out and the Sixers were playing great. And I said, then I can settle in and watch the last half hour of the Fresno State game uninterrupted. That last half hour, Jack, turned into damn near 2 hours, and I just the game was wildly entertaining, 50-49 at the half. Everybody was there, was having a great time. But if somebody would have told me at half what was going to happen in that second half, I would say you're out of your ever-loving mind. I think of the number of things that UNLV did wrong in the last couple of minutes, and I lost track. The Bulldogs come back improbably, yet their best free throw shooters between Heidbreder, Douglas, and Collins missed 4 critical free throws late down the stretch, and they still find a way to win the game. And I'm not so sure I know how in hell they did it to this moment, Jack.
Well, yeah, I've seen games where, you know, both teams are playing, and the announcer says, "Now, this is really a shame. Neither team deserves to lose. Last night, neither team deserved to win." I could get in trouble for saying that, but it was one of the worst played games, one of the worst officiated games. I mean, you had 3 flagrant fouls, the first one against UNLV, the next 2 against Fresno State. You had a pair, not just one, but a pair of double technicals, which are, you know, just like BS at 20 paces, because it doesn't affect the game at all, except it gives each guy another foul. I'll tell you where it was similar to the Kirk Gibson game. So many guys fouled out for UNLV that all of a sudden a kid who was in street clothes ran into the locker room at UNLV and came running out with a jersey on, because they had a guy foul out that they would have only had 4 players left. So this number 13 comes out of nowhere. They should have had a phone booth, I guess, for this guy to change in. And he comes in and plays, so they have 5 guys. And then at the end of the game, when there were some clutch plays in the game. The first at the end of the game, and it was Reber making those 2 free throws when they had, for some reason, UNLV shooting. I mean, they announced, the referee announced flagrant foul on White 7. what he meant, I think.
Prior to the actual play on the other end. Exactly, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. What he meant was flagrant foul on Fresno State, and White 7 is going to shoot, because what happens is the referee says flagrant foul on White 7, and the next thing you know, White 7 is shooting two free throws. It was like you can foul yourself to get free throws. And then Reber comes down. If he doesn't make those two free throws to give the Bulldogs a chance being down three, then the game's over. So he makes two clutch free throws and had a career game for him. The most aggressive I'd seen him play all year. Then with Fresno State calling timeout with a couple seconds to go, with 3.5, whatever, seconds to go, UNLV has a chance to tell the team, look, if they throw the ball in bounds, we have to foul because we're up
right.
three. And there are only a few seconds to go. And they throw the ball in bounds, and Highbreeder takes two dribbles where they can foul them, and they don't. And then the next clutch play is Douglas hitting a deep three. But as my former boss at Tennessee, Don DeVoe, used to say, last-second shots always go in, because the kid is not thinking about, should I pass, should I shoot, should I drive, should I pull up? If I miss, will I be taken out of the game? You have to shoot it. Because if you don't, your team's going to lose. Your total focus is on shooting. Usually those last-second shots go in. And Douglas, at least this time, last year, if you remember, he made one. It was his fifth three of the second half and came down and blew his knee out. This time he made the three.
Right.
At least he's okay. Then, for some reason, UNLV with a second and a half takes the ball. I mean, Fresno State is set. It's not like they had a guy basket hanging who could catch it and lay it in. Fresno State sets their defense with a second and a half, and the kid, for some reason, throws the ball the length of the floor where nobody has a chance to catch it, and it goes out of bounds so that Fresno State not only gets the ball but gets it underneath their own basket, since the clock never started. It was never touched.
Right.
And they have a chance for Jake to hit that shot. It looked like they were trying to set up. I believe they had McCon in the game at the top of the circle. And they had, I think, Gorey didn't foul. I think it was Gorey setting a back screen. And it looked like they were going to throw a lob to McCon with a second and a half and let him jump up and dunk it. But I guess they didn't have it. Highbreeder steps out, and for some reason, they're not guarding the best shooter that we have. And he makes a shot at the buzzer. And the cool thing was, well, cool and bad at the same time, was it happened to be student night, where they were giving away some awesome things. They gave away two things at every timeout. And you got to remember, there are four TV media timeouts each half. They're giving away two, like, electric scooters, tickets to the Sacramento Kings game, $200
right.
Adidas gift certificates. I mean, some really nice prizes, because it was student night. So they had more students than ever. And when Jake hits the shot, the students rush the floor, which was a great scene. What wasn't such a great scene is it wasn't like there were thousands of students rushing the floor, which you would have seen at Grand Canyon or Utah State or San Diego State or, you know, wherever. But it was still a neat thing to see the students mobbing the players, and the players, you know, unbelievably happy because it was a game they had no chance of winning. Now, possibly the kid threw the ball length of the floor, because if UNLV had another kid foul out, I don't know if they had an extra uniform for somebody to put on.
Well, the Bulldogs would have had.
You're right. Jack Buck's line is exactly right.
A couple things to clean up here, too, about it. One, you are absolutely correct. Jake Afton was talking to Casey Jacobson And by the way, Casey, of course, was a fine player at Stanford. We know that. And then the other brother at UOP, we've talked about this many times before. And he's been here, Casey, been here a lot as an analyst, and just still lives up in the Bay Area, for goodness sake. But Jake had mentioned what you were talking about, Jack. That was designed to go toward the hoop with Gorey. And for some reason, Jake said in that last 1.5, that wasn't there, and they did not step out to stop him, and they gave him what was a very easy look for him. I mean, that was almost a practice jumper, for goodness sake. That was one of the million mistakes that UNLV made. The other thing you talked about, Jack, and this is the crazy rules that they've got to get sorted out. You know, we talked about, you remember the Tuck rule. The Raider fans remember the Tuck rule very well, right? And the justification afterward by the officials was, we don't blame you for being upset, but don't get mad at us for properly administrating the rule. Get mad with the guys in the rules committee who put that rule about the Tuck in there to begin with. And what they were saying was, bad rule, proper interpretation, right? Well, in regard to Reber, you're right. First of all, if Reber doesn't hit that 1-3, the Bulldogs may not have been able to come back because he had a big three there when they were taking on water. Yep. And you're absolutely right about the two throws. If they don't hit those, then they're down more than three. But on that foul, here's what happened. That was a flagrant against UNLV, but the officials didn't see it. If they saw it, then they would have stopped the clock right then. But because they didn't see it, they allowed the play to continue, and the Bulldogs fouled. Then Vance, of course, challenges the thing. They go back and check it, and they say, you're right, it was a flagrant, but we let the play go forward, so we're going to have to allow this guy to shoot two free throws. Then you get your chance, which is insane, because if they missed it, they should have backtracked to when the foul was committed. Dead ball, you can't let a foul be counted and then say, but afterward, we're allowing a play to go forward. That's reverse engineering, and it damn near cost the Bulldogs a chance. As far as the end of the game, Douglas's three, you're right. The one that he hit that he ripped up his knee was a corner jumper. This was a Steph Curry bomb from about 28. That thing was dead center, and you're also right, shooter's mentality. When you're mono-focused on the rim and not worried about anything else, that's when you make that shot. But I'll tell you, it was an unbelievable win. It was one that actually made it. I had somebody ask me, did it make SportsCenter? Well, understand this. The SportsCenter overnight is a repeat of the SportsCenter that we see usually at 10 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock in the morning Eastern. By the time that game ended in the East, it was, I mean, we're talking about 2 o'clock in the morning beyond that. But this morning in the 4 a.m. SportsCenter art time, I happen to be up. I call it the shank of the evening, Jack. The 7 a.m. SportsCenter, they always have a what happened was, and that is what happened when you were sleeping. And they did have the highlights. They had the three by Douglas, ESPN did, and the high breeder three, the jumper rather, the two to win it. So it did make it to national telecast highlights at least. But I'll tell you, Jack, as great as it was for Vance and the team, and you and I have talked about this over and over again, the games you play or you coach that you know you're going to win even though everything looks like you're going to lose, there's something in the back of your mind that says we're winning this one, which is usually offset, more than offset, by the reality of those games that you're ahead that you feel like no matter what you're doing, you're helpless, you're going to lose, right? It happens. Yeah. If I'm that UNLV team, I am sick to my stomach because as great as the comeback was, they bleeped that game up in every way you possibly could in the last 2.5 minutes. You could not make more mistakes if you tried, Jack.
Yeah, it was coaching malpractice. And I'll tell you what's funny is when we were down 10, I was sitting with Jim Hill's camp, the major donor, especially to the football team, former football player, and a guy who Jalen Green lived with when he was at Memorial. Jim's a great guy. And Brian Richburg, another big Bulldog supporter, even though both of his girls are going to USC, probably because he had too much money and he needed to spend it on tuition. But I was sitting with them, and I said, you know, we're down 10. We can win this game. And as the game was going on, we're down like six with 55 seconds to go. I said, you know, we can win this game. And it just, I don't know, you had that feeling. And afterwards, when I'm listening to the post game on the radio, Mark Q. Jones said the exact same thing when the Dogs were down 10. He said, you know what? UNLV will let the Dogs back into this game. So I guess UNLV has a reputation for doing things like this. But, yeah, I would not, if I were in UNLV's administration, I might be calling in Josh Pasternak this morning and saying, how did you possibly lose that game? Because that was a game that, you're grasping defeat from the jaws of victory. You know, I don't know. That was a game that...
That's the bottom line. They lost their composure of the team. They lost their cool. You have your leading scorer, Gibbs Lawhorn, who had 28 against the Bulldogs last time they played in Vegas, foul out with 28. He manages to get involved in that mess on the sideline that he had no business getting involved in. They never shut up all night long. They love to yap. And it's fine to yap, but you better make damn sure you have the game put away before you start yapping like that. And so, you know, I give Fresno State all due credit. Like I said, Jake misses back-to-back free throws, which never happens. Right. Collins is a good free throw shooter. So is Douglas.
Up to that point, he had made something like 69 of his last 70 free throws.
Well, he was shooting 91% from the line. And what I'm saying is, it wasn't as though he choked them. They just rattled out. And the thing is, you miss four free throws in clutch time, crunch time, and really more particularly the last 2 minutes, and you still find a way to win. And the fact that the Bulldogs did not let go of the rope, we talk about this so often, and, you know, you brought it up, Q brought it up, that the belief that you're going to win, and, you know, it's so difficult, and you look at UNLV, and they had been blown out three straight times, the last three games they played, including two at home where they got their rears kicked. And they come in here and lose a game like that. And for Fresno State, yes, they wanted Air Force. But again, the Bulldogs are still searching for that, you know, on-the-mantle victory, right?
That one.
And that signature win would not have been last night going in, because you're playing a team at home, your home, who had lost three straight. This is not like going, for instance, if they go on this road trip now, and if they were to win Saturday at the Lawler Center against Nevada, that's a big deal. If they go and play a close game and somehow find a way to win at Logan, now all of a sudden you're talking about some sort of Hoosiers-like miracle here. But the bottom line is, they didn't give up last night at a time when they could have easily packed it in. Very easily, Jack. You know, where you can say it, Q can say it, I can say it, Paul can say it, we can say, you know what, they got a shot. They have to believe that down like that, that this isn't going to be another L at home that they have to answer to. And I give them tremendous credit to stay in there. And I'll tell you what, Jake, at the end of the game, talk about bloody but unbowed, right? He's doing the post-game interview on national TV, and he's got blood all over the place. It was just, you could not have drawn up a game, like I said, that was that crazy, that unpredictable, that entertaining, by the way. It wasn't like some, you know, 40-38 game, but a game, Jack, that took forever to play. I don't know if they have stats about games, again, where it wasn't delayed by, like I said, something logistics, you know, in nature, like, you know, the court being having moisture on it, or the rim being crooked or whatever. There was nothing that stopped the game other than the playing of the game, meaning the number of times they had to go to review, etc. I don't know if they took it from the start, the real time that it took from the start of that game to the end, if there has ever been a college game that stayed in regulation 40 minutes that took that long to play, Jack, without some sort of interruption of a logistic nature. I don't know if there's any record for that, but they had to be damn close.
Keep in mind that the starting time was 8 o'clock. So now you're talking about after 11 o'clock at night. I mean, you got on a school night. And you had little kids at the game. I mean, they were cheering. They didn't, you know, they were very they were very happy. They were amused at the game. Now, the game was delayed. It was delayed by the officials with all the stoppage that they had. I know it was funny. Jim Hillscamp was up there and said, oh, you have to go to the bathroom. And we were up in a suite, so you have your own bathroom. I said, go ahead. Right. They're reviewing this play. You're gonna have time to go and come back, and you won't miss anything. And sure enough, it was, you know, he came back. I said, well, they're still reviewing this. I don't know what it was they were reviewing, and I still can't understand how they announced a flagrant foul on a UNLV player, and the UNLV player shot the free throws. So
well, that's what we're just talking about, because they missed it. That's why Fresno State had to point it out. But I'm with you, Jack. As I mentioned to you a few minutes ago, if that's the case, go back to where the clock was when the foul was committed, the flagrant. Back it up. Erase what happened, forget the Fresno State foul, and put the clock back where it was and start with the free throws for Fresno State. Don't give them the two throws. Right. That doesn't make any sense. You know, that's like saying someone scored a touchdown and you kicked the extra point and you found out that there was a holding penalty on the touchdown. Well, in the National Football League, you have to make sure that's settled before you even bother with the extra point. You don't allow it to go forward until you've got that reviewed. But you know, this is what happens when the officials miss it. And in all honesty, if Fresno State, if Vance Wahlberg wouldn't have raised hell about it and wouldn't have been able to put themselves in that position, the Bulldogs would not have gotten the flagrant. Then afterward, you get the world famous letter from the league saying they missed the call, right? And that in a buck will buy you something these days, maybe a pack of gum. But I guess the bigger world issue, Jack, and for the people that were there, it was great. I hope it means more come out. I can't promise you a game like that again, all right? But what does this mean now if you go to the Lawler Center and lose? Does this erase what happened last night? I mean, do you have to now follow this up with a win in a real tough place to play, though the Bulldogs have played well in Reno over the years?
Yeah, and they played well against Nevada the last time. Really, that's one of the games Vance has said that they gave away that he thought they certainly should have won. And, ended up getting beat, right down the stretch in an exchange of baskets at the wrong, being at the wrong end at the end of the game. But the one thing I think this game showed me anyway is that it's really a together team. I mean, you have these guys really root for each other. These guys hang in there. They don't hang their heads. They don't point fingers. They're really and when you heard Reber at the end with Paul and Q doing the post game, you can tell how much these guys really enjoy playing with each other. And it's difficult because it hasn't been a particularly great season. Like you said, there hasn't been a signature win. And in terms of the next game, it might be a tough place to play, but it's a lot easier than the place after that. You're going to have to push all the chips in at the Lawler Center, because going to Utah State is no bargain. First of all, it's hard to win in Logan. And second of all, they're the number one team in the league.
Well, I think you buried the lead there, Jack. I think it's reverse order. It's the number one team of the league, and it's always hard to win at Logan. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're playing that club in a parking lot. You know, you're going to have a problem with them. Although, the Bulldogs, and admittedly, neither team shot well here in town. You know, we were talking about this yesterday. As you know from coaching all those years, when you get into conference play in February, you're generally speaking playing teams for a second time, and that's where you have the direct comparison for the first time you played them a month or so earlier, right? We saw this happen with UNLV. We were able to look at what happened at the end of December that started conference vis-a-vis last night. Well, when you look at Utah State, they were here a few weeks ago, admittedly, at SMC, but neither team shot it well. And it was kind of a game where we were waiting for Fresno State to either fall out of it or get real close. Instead, it kind of stayed at arm's length. The Bulldogs were sort of within, they certainly were under the number, which I think was like 15 and a half or whatever it was. But it wasn't so much that as it was, Jack, they weren't pushed all the way out of the gym. They also never got fully back in. Is there anything you take from that, or do you say going there is a complete different animal, so forget what happened here where you were fairly close?
well, you can't even think about it until after you play Saturday. So,
right.
But I think how you do Saturday factors in more than anything about just thinking about going to Logan. You know, going to Logan is so tough because of the students. They put those students and they have those crazy things that they have while you're shooting free throws, those hallucinogenic things that guys, where they go round and round and your eyes are supposed to get foggy.
Right.
They have the cheers. This is the losing team. This is the winning team. You know, they're the ones who really started that. It's really an experience, and it'd be somehow to just be great if our students could see that. And, Utah State students aren't any brighter than ours. I mean, they're more enthusiastic, maybe. The thing, and Harry Gaykin came up at halftime, and we always visit, and he said, you know, it's amazing what it's only, there were probably 200 or 300 students, maybe, because they were giving so many things away, as opposed to the handful that are there normally. And Harry said, you know, it's amazing with just a couple hundred students, the effect that they have on the crowd, because the students are the most enthusiastic people. You know, they're the real red wave. The gray wave, you know, they're going to cheer. You know, they may cheer for the free chicken sandwich or, you know, they may cheer if the game's close. But the students are the one that really give the environment. That's what Cameron Indoor is about. The Duke students, you know, I mean, if we only had something like that, I think our record would be entirely different. And you look at the teams in the league that have the great student body. Well, look at the teams that don't, and they're the teams at the bottom. You got Air Force, and you have San Jose State, and you know, usually they're near the bottom of the league, and because of it, you know, you don't have that same factor going for you, and it's a shame. And you know, what are you going to do about it until they, you know, start coming out? And I don't know if winning does it. I mean, if winning did it, then you know they would have been out, several other games that we'd won, and the next game was a home game. So yeah, we'll see. These next two games are difficult, but this is what I was talking about. These are the chances they have for signature wins. Right now, we haven't beaten anybody above seventh in the conference, because I believe Paul Leffler said we're tied for seventh with UNLV right now at 5-6. And everybody else is below us who we've beaten. These are the chances we have for signature wins, and these are the things, like you said, can turn the season. You know, what if, like you're saying, you know, what if you can be, you know, win some of these games, then the season turns, because now you have a team that's a together team that's going to really believe in themselves. Now I think they believe, you know, we're a bunch of good guys and we play hard. Yeah, but you know, we're 500 team. If they can win a string of couple, and Vance had mentioned this, I think he said, I think if we can win the first one, then I think we'll string 2, 3, and 4. And I think that's what we're waiting for. And the next tour, it's a tough stretch, but they're opportunity games, and you got to grasp the opportunity when you have it.
Well, you're right. And it is, you know, objectively speaking, and there's no question about it, a terrific win. And like I said, a wildly entertaining game, one of the craziest games I've ever seen. I just, you know, you shake your head and say you pick up 7 points in literally the last couple of seconds of the game. And you know, the flip side is, you know, how much did you win it? How much did UNLV lose it? And that's what you're talking about, Jack, that if you're Fresno State, it was a great win. But it's also the harsh reality that if UNLV, this is as objective as you can be, if they would have taken care of their own housekeeping, they would have won that game. The Bulldogs, simply put, would have run out of time. UNLV opened the door. Fresno State was able to go through it. If it brings them more victories and a greater feeling of deserving to win games, that's half the battle right there. As far as the student body goes, you know, winning is a great deodorant. I think you're going to have to win and win consistently before the student body comes out, simply because this is a commuter school. Fresno State, Fresno itself, as a community is, as you know, when I grew up here, it was 200,000 people. Now the metro area is over 500,000. The outlying areas, of course, takes you, you know, into seven figures easily, as far as what you have out there. But the people that are going to school there, so many of them are on campus just long enough to go to school, and then they're gone again. And they're not. You don't have the community feeling that you have at some campuses. You don't have a ton of student body on campus all the time. Yes, you have adjacent apartments. You have the dorms, but you don't have what other schools have, where you've got thousands and thousands of students that are right there. And a lot of them are going to school, and with the cost of school, even as a state school, they're going to work afterward. And so they're not in that position to go to an 8 o'clock game at night. All that having been said, this community, as you know, Jack, will come out if you win. You know, if you win and can win consistently, they'll be out for you, and we'll see. And I will share this with you because it's one of my favorites about Cellin Arena. Even at Cellin, there was an older generation, as you know. You were certainly there in the 80s, in the 90s, I'm sorry. And you know, I was there, obviously, from the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s on. But you had a lot of students that would be up above the low section, up above the moneyed aristocracy, if you will. And when Mike Walden, who came from L.A., was a fine sportscaster in Los Angeles, the games were being produced by California Sports, who also produced the Lakers games. So we had guys from SoCal doing the Bulldog games. Mike Walden was on a show called Bizarre on Showtime with John Biner, the comedian. And the late, great Bob Einstein, who was Super Dave Osborne, was a very unsuccessful stuntman. That was his gig. And Super Dave had these stunts that he and his technical assistant, Fuji Akiyito, put together that would fail miserably every time. And the sportscaster to report on this was, of course, Mike Walden. This show was on Showtime. So all the frat boys, all the students would watch Showtime, which was a fairly early entity in the 80s. But the older generation had no blessed idea about this show. But every time that Super Dave failed, Mike Walden would come up with his garish coat on and say, "How you going? How's it going, Super Dave?" And he would say, "Bleep you, Walden." That's what he would say. And of course, he wouldn't say bleep you. So fast forward to Mike Walden doing the stand-up for Fresno State. He gets ready to do the game. Now, just look at the mindset of the older generation. They're getting ready for Fresno State, and this is their announcer. They know it's their television announcer, and the frat boys at Fresno State are screaming, "Hey, Mike, Super Dave says bleep you," although they don't use bleep. And Mike Walden smiles, laughs, and waves at them. Now, the look on the faces, the befuddlement of the older generation, Jack, was worth the price of admission, because they're looking and going, "Wait a minute, our frat boys, our student body are spewing profanities to our announcer, and our announcer appears to enjoy it." It was just, but you can't get that without your students, Jack. You can't get there without that.
Well, you also remember this. When we came here, Jerry Tarkanian's charge was, "Let's sell out Cellin Arena so we can get an on-campus facility," because the complaint was the students can't get all the way down to Cellin. So that arena was built for the students, whether they're commuters or not. And there are about 30,000 students, and you're not asking all 30,000 to come to the game. So, you know, it's a... You know, you're right about the chasm between the old generation and the three or four generations after that, which is, you know, pretty much, I guess they'd be almost grandsons or great grandsons and daughters of you know, the people attending the games. But you're right. I mean, that's what it is. But if you've got to keep in mind, this arena was built on campus so that the students could go to the games. And it's not like they're giving free tickets to the students and giving away electric scooters and tickets to the Kings games just to get them there. And luckily, it looked good for TV for those people who were still watching at the end to see a couple hundred kids run out. And the good thing is they were in the opposite end, so they had to rush the floor and, you know, run all the way from one end of the arena to the other. It would have made for such a you know, magical moment to have a few thousand of them rush the floor like is happening at every other school, seems like, you know, when there's a big win or an upset or something like that. And if ever there was a game, like you said, I think Fresno State scored something like 7 points in 3.5 seconds.
Yeah, they needed 6 to tie, and they got seven to win.
Yep.
Last question.
And not only that, but at one time, I know it fluctuated back and forth. At one time, Fresno State was a 1.5 point favorite. Now, how would you feel if you had put a lot of money on that throughout the entire game, and then at the end you end up winning? I mean, there couldn't have been if that was written as a movie script, nobody would believe it.
All I know is if you're ever at a race book and that kind of game takes place, here's what you see. Those that lose, they are literally howling. You don't need to guess who it was that should have won their particular bet. And those that won that should have lost are the ones who very quietly head to the door saying, you know what, I'll cash the ticket in a little bit later, because they're not going to tempt fate. You only get the emoting from those that got the old shillelagh, you know. That's all there is to it.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. I'll never bet again. That's exactly right.
Now, last question for you, Jack.
All right.
No, go ahead. I was going to say, I've got one final question until you and I reconvene next week. And, of course, when we reconvene, the Bulldogs will have played both at Lawler and at Spectrum and Logan, and we'll see where they're at. But I did want to ask you this. I know this community very, very well. You know, I've been here for now in a couple of days, God willing, it'll be 69 years. Okay, we'll see. That, you might want to still bet the under on that one, because there's a few days to go. Okay.
Yeah.
What I know is, particularly if it's Fresno State, there's always been a misunderstanding that if it's Bulldogs, people show up. No, if it's Bulldogs and they're winning, people show up. If they're nationally prominent, people show up. If they're winning conference titles, people show up. If this team, and I'm not talking about this year, but if this program is able to turn it, and so by the time we get to the pack next year, this team is more than just competitive. They are where the San Diego States of the world have become prominent, where I mentioned to you that Steve, when he came in, Steve Fisher came in, he said he had to give away tickets by going to the mall. People did not even know San Diego State played basketball. He said that was his line.
Yeah.
If the Bulldogs can rise from the ashes like the Phoenix, maybe actually win in Phoenix in a couple of weeks against Grand Canyon, will we see at least 10,000 there so that we can close the upper part and have everything filled beyond that? Can we see that night after night, Jack? You got 60 seconds to solve the world's problems here.
Yeah, I think so. Sure. I mean, I don't think what more would people want? I think people want to be winners, and fans are fans because, well, short for fanatic. I mean, that's where, you know, fan comes from. And I think that the people, if it were to turn around, I can tell you this, Fresno State has much more tradition in basketball than San Diego State ever had. And yet San Diego State played for the national championship a few years ago. So yeah, Fresno State could certainly do it. There's no doubt. And, you know, let's get it done, but you got to win first.
And that's it. That's the bottom line, Jack. You got to win. And as entertaining as last night was, one more time, a great win. I'm happy for Vance. I'm happy for the team, for everybody around the university. It is a game that, in all honesty, UNLV kicked away. So the next time the Bulldogs take the court, they need to get a W, and they need to start getting W's when the other team plays well and Fresno State just plays better. And I know Vance will be the first to say it. We are not going to rely on other guys to play kick the can in the last 2 seconds of games. We have got to win it of our own volition. I hope they're getting there, Jack. The great thing about sport, you and I both know it. You don't have to guess. This is not a theoretical argument. You are, as Bill Parcells said, what your record says you are. If you win, you win. If you lose, you lose. And stats are sometimes the lament of the loser, right?
Exactly.
Well, I tell you what, I hope you're feeling better, my friend, and nothing would make either of us any happier than you can possibly imagine than having this team pick up a couple. I'll tell you what, I'll settle for 1-1 on the road trip. How about that? Would that be okay with you?
Well, I think it'd be okay with everybody.
Yeah, no doubt. Jack, I appreciate
it. Except for the one team that lost.
Well, I was going to say, exactly. Well, anyway, listen, Jack, I appreciate it. I hope you do feel better, my friend. I'll certainly be in touch. Take care, Paisan. We'll see you. Again, 559-287-3305, 559-287-3305, FertigJack@AOL.com. Join the Timeout Club. Appreciate it, Jack. Talk to you next week.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Tony.
Okay, Jack Fertig will take a break, come back, tell you about the schedule, hand it off to Phil. He is at Radio Row in what is a beautiful, beautiful week of weather for San Francisco. It can get ugly sometimes in the Bay Area, but outside of the occasional earthquake, this has so far been a great week of weather, and a lot of the national media from the East coming out of the deep freeze, they are singing the praises of the weather, and I've said it before, that's why 40 million of us are out here. It's great for you guys to visit. We just want you to go back home to Connecticut after it's done. Take a break. Come back with the schedule after this. Bulldog Hour continues on this Wednesday on Central Valley Sports Leader, 1430 ESPN. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. 255. Couple minutes ago, the show handed off to Phil on Radio Row in San Francisco for the Super Bowl. Get to Phil in just a few minutes, and I'll get to the schedule in just a second here. But very quickly, an email and two great friends, Gino and Visalia, and DePaul G and Paso Robles, both asking about Roger Craig. He deserves to make it. I know he's getting in the hall. It has been 35 years since Roger fumbled away the three-peat. I know we talk about this all the time. I didn't expect him to climb to the top of the Golden Gate Bridge and throw himself off in an act of contrition, guys. But I would have appreciated it, since it still drives me out of my bleeping mind 35 years later, if Roger would have said that it didn't take a little bit more than one day to get over that fumble. And keep in mind, nobody has three-peated. So, yes, I'm still irritated, but he does deserve to get in the hall. I just hope he doesn't fumble his trophy away or whatever they do when they honor him. Thanks for bringing it up, guys. And Paul G., is this because I put the kiss of death on your Rams? Is that why you're doing this? Or is it just fun to do this to me? The other things, Benito, I'll be sure and tell Jack that he has now confirmed that you are smarter than your wife because you are an FSU student. I don't know if I were you, I would share that with your wife, but that's up to you, pal. And then finally, Howard, you asked about the foul on the bench. Casey Jacobson asked about it last night, too. Evidently, it was Lawhorn who was called. I guess he was called for a technical, but it didn't matter because it was just a technical for a guy on the bench. I'm with you. I think there should have been a greater penalty because he'd already fouled out, but evidently that's not in the rule book. That game last night might change a lot of the rules for college basketball when they go back and review it. All right. Now, as far as the schedule goes, it's brought to you by our pal Ed Dunkel and his great business, Precision Civil Engineering. Planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape architecture, construction management, all there under one roof, 449-4500 at precisioneng.net. We commend Ed for the great fundraising he does for his alma mater, Fresno State, through the Lyles College of Engineering. Again, the goal is always to unify athletics and academics to provide more funding resources to students. It's worked beautifully over the years. Ed is a terrific guy, a very proud grad at Fresno State, and you see him at all sorts of events around the area, and of course he has a lot of those grads at Fresno State going to work for him at Precision Civil Engineering, just an absolutely terrific company. Now, as far as the schedule goes, tonight the only thing on Sunbird Sports Show, Paul Metter's fine show on 790, our sister station, the Deuce, 6 to 7, but also there's play-by-play coming up of FPU, that's Fresno Pacific Athletics, basketball and baseball as well. coming around the end of this week and across the weekend. Of course, the Lakers are on as they're finally getting back home after the Grammy-induced forever road trip as they'll get back to the crypt. And we also have the feature for us, naturally, the Super Bowl starting at 11 a.m. with the coverage. They'll kick it just after 3:30. That's Westwood One's coverage on 1430. Phil, again, is at Radio Row. He'll be with you in just a couple of seconds. And remind you, Phil, normally 3 to 6 with his fine show Behind the Bench. That's the case today on location in San Francisco, including normally Thursdays at Fashion Furniture with our good friend Radha Vedikian. Best furniture on the planet, nothing like in all of California. Great eats when Phil's around, and always stop on in, say hello, and check out the furniture El Paso across from River Park, and give Phil a call on the Lee's Air Hotline, 559-320-1430. Paul Meadows has one other show in addition to the Sunbird Sports Show, and that is his long-running show on Saturday mornings, 10 a.m. to noon, from First Ring Sports, Central Valley Sports Report. We're with you at 2 o'clock each and every weekday. You can reach me, tdad1 at att.net, tdad, the number one, at att.net. First names are fine. Matt Norville's up in San Jose for Fresno State women's basketball tonight. You can find that on DMW. He'll also have the radio feed. I'll talk to Matt tomorrow. I'll talk to Jackson on Friday, and we'll certainly continue to go over this Fresno State game. Thanks again to Jorge. Thanks, as always, to Jack Furtig. Enjoy the Bulldogs tonight on the MW, and stay tuned for Phil from San Francisco. Three terrific hours, all about the Super Bowl. I just wish the 49ers were there. Well, they are there. I just wish they were there and actually playing the game. But, hey, you know what? There's always next year. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Phil is coming up on KFIG Fresno.